Welcome to the Simply Be Found Huddle, where Dean and Rob talk about everything business and business related. Today we have our guest Ray. Ray, welcome to the show. Can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and how they find you and all those good details? Let's just have a great conversation about wherever we go with this.
Sure. Let me start off by telling you, thank you so much for the opportunity to be on this show. I'm so looking forward to this. I've watched a couple of your shows and just the interaction you have with your guests and stuff like that. This is going to be awesome. So my name is Ray Lozano. I have worked in the drug and alcohol treatment and prevention field, literally since straight out of high school. Super easy to find. If they're looking for a youth speaker, I'm one of the top guys. If they were just to Google youth speaker or drug youth speaker, I'm the first one that pops up on Google. But just raylozano.com and you'll find all the information there that they need to get a hold of me on.
Cool.
It's really interesting. So,
yeah, you know, that's really kind of funny for what we were talking about before you hopped into the green room. We were joking about my dad. So my dad was major into drugs and all that stuff when I was growing up. Uh-huh. Something I don't really talk about much on this show, but Dean was like, oh yeah, we're gonna do some business with him when we were first getting started. And he had a review about being the best, you know, crack dealer inside of Greeley or something like that. It's one of those things to where it's kind of funny that that's your area of expertise.
Yeah.
Which tells you we go everywhere with our conversation.
We go everywhere.
I'm ready. Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, I have a non-use background. So yeah, I can't remember the last time I had a beer or anything like that, but man, I had a brother that was a drug trafficker. I had a sister that cooked meth like nobody's business. My other brother was a drinker and a fighter. So yeah, I can talk about that all day long, man.
So I know you kind of do a lot with the schools and the youth. Do you do anything with businesses as well? You kind of said that you're going into the corporate age a little bit.
Yeah.
Talking about that and the concerns that the businesses might have with abuses and things like that with their employees and or themselves even, you know?
Yeah. Well, I took a whole different turn with that because I've been working in the addiction field. And so kind of my area of expertise is, why do people get addicted to drugs? You know, why do they keep going back to the same dealer over and over again? And what is that connection there? And I have a buddy of mine who was a former gang member. And he would tell me, man, in Los Angeles, like, I know this is crazy, but he would have these people that would ride like two or three buses to get to him to buy drugs from him. And he started to look into this whole loyalty thing. So I started to look in what causes our brain to become addicted to something. We all have it, right? When I'm up there speaking in front of an audience, that's my addiction. For you guys, it's probably doing this podcast, put something in your head like, yeah, this makes me feel successful. This makes me feel like I belong. I feel like I'm contributing. And if I were to take this podcast away from you, you would probably go through the same exact thing that somebody who's coming off of drugs would go through. Maybe a little bit of depression, being a little bit lost, not sure what direction you're going in, searching for something that gives you meaning, right? So I took all of that information and I kind of converted it to, how do you get your client? How do you get the person that you're working with addicted to you as a business? Because we all have it inside our head. So that is my focus for businesses, is you're working with somebody and you have two types of people that you work with. You have one type that has to be there because you're the only business in town that does that. They get their paperwork on time, they file, they pay their fees, whatever they got to pay, which is great. But then what you're looking for, the people that want to be with you. These are the people that do all the same exact thing, but once they're done, they promote your business. They talk about it. They're, you know, when somebody says, hey, I'm looking for such and such, you're the first business that comes up. So that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm taking all of those things that I know about addiction. I'm applying it to businesses so your client gets addicted to you.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you say that, because I've always referred to marketing as a drug. Yeah, yes. You're always searching for that first high that you've ever gotten. So if you did ads on Google or Facebook or whatever it might be, you paid this amount of money and you got this in return, you just keep going through. So if you get it to work, you're always chasing that first high when it worked the best in there. And sometimes you keep chasing it and you can kill your business because the market changed and you didn't change with it. And it's like that addiction piece.
Dude, you nailed it. 100%. That's it right there. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And so, yeah, you don't change. You keep doing the same thing. And what happens with most businesses, if they're like, well, if I hit this button six times, I get what I'm looking for. And then when the market starts to change, you're like, well, maybe if I hit it 12 times, maybe if I hit it 15 times. And I work with businesses like that. I'm like, what you're doing is in the past. You know, it doesn't work anymore. So, yeah, you nailed it when you said that marketing is a drug. It totally is. It just goes into our brain and it does the same thing that, you know, it doesn't make us wreck our car or hopefully destroy our marriage, but it does the same thing inside our brain.
I think that's what happens with a lot of businesses. They just get in a rut and they don't want to, and they don't, I don't know why we don't take a step back. And sometimes that's why having somebody like us or you as coaches to say, hey, did you look at this a little bit? Because sometimes you just don't see it because you're too close to it as well.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a thing that happens with people that do drugs. And it's a little thing called euphoric recall. And so I'm going to refer to drugs and then marketing and stuff like that. And so it's the way that our brain codes information. And so I'm sure you guys have been to a place that you used to go to when you were a kid, right? And you look around like, I thought this lake was bigger, or I thought that swing was higher, or I thought, you know, and it just seems so different because your brain has kind of coded it with this candy coating to make sure that it's a good memory. So what happens with businesses and with people in business, and this is all goes back related to drugs, our brain is unbelievably lazy and it codes information. Now, let me show you real quick how lazy our brain is. And I just did this at a business meeting the other day. And I love it because when I'm presenting this information, I look out over the audience and they all do this. I'll go, is that true? And they're like, oh my God, it is true. And they realize that they never thought about this. You two guys, me included, this is nuts. We have 11 meals that we eat over and over and over and over and over again. We rotate through the same 11 meals because our brain is easy. Is that true for you, Robert?
Yeah. Yes, for me too.
And Dean, do you make your coffee the same way every morning?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you make the same way every morning? Yeah. And so what happens in business is our brain finds a solution, right? And it sticks to that solution, and it's so lazy, it doesn't want to try to find a new solution. So when the market changes, our brain still thinks, I can do the same exact thing. And I see this with parents, and I see this in my own life. Right now, we're switching everything up just because I got tired of thinking the same way. So that's what it is. Our brain's lazy. And it just, once it finds a solution, it sticks to that solution.
Well, look at some of your top CEOs. So if you look at you know, Steve Jobs, look at Mark Zuckerberg, you look at any of these big corporate tech people, especially
with their
personality types. I'm guilty of this. Dean, you're guilty of this.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you look at most of them, I'm usually in my black shirt. I don't want to have to, I'm wearing the same clothes over and over again because I don't want to have to think about it. It's just a habit. And it just those things that you do inside of business.
Right.
That's why when you look at like apparel for businesses, and I'm going to pick on your other business here, Dean.
Okay.
That's why, you know, having shirts, not just for branding purposes, but to where everything has those cues inside of there makes it easier to go through.
Yeah. 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 And you see that like when an app is updated on your phone or something and it mixes all your, you know, all the places you are used to going to find apps or finding your contact, and you just get so upset. You know, you're like, why did they have to do this app? Why couldn't we? It's just because the brain hates breaking out of that. And for businesses, for people that are listening right now, that's what you have to do, is you have to get over your brain being upset on that kind of stuff. You have to embrace it because it's going to come. You know, change is inevitable. And if you can get to the place you go, well, change is happening, I'm going to flow with it, you know, that you're going to be much better off than trying to fight it.
Well, most businesses fail because they can't pivot.
Yeah.
And they can't see, they're working in their business, they're not working on their business, and it makes them too close to where they can't see the failure about ready to happen.
Right, right. Man, that is so true. You have nailed it again, Robert. Oh, yeah.
And if you look at the whole entire marketing area for how they, you know, some of the biggest corporations in the world market, they actually go to the social facility that I learned about inside of Las Vegas. I forget the name of it, but they have a mock casino. It has the hotel, has the restaurants, has everything in it, and they bring people in. It's not open to the public, but then they study the behaviors from every single aspect. Mm-hmm. And you have some of your biggest brands, some of your biggest retailers, some of your biggest restaurants that use that data, not only for where they place that slot machine to be able to get you to play that slot machine or play that roulette table or whatever it might be, but what triggers inside of the brain to be able to get you to do that and right. get you to repeat.
Right.
It's no different than a drug that's out there. I mean, there's a whole entire set of people who worked on, from what my understanding, they worked on how to get people addicted to cigarettes. And then they were hired, those same scientists were hired to then get people addicted to sugar and all these additives that were put into food to be able to create that same behavior. Well, we use those same things inside of marketing all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you're so right on that. And what's happening right now is Las Vegas somehow has forgotten how to pivot. And they're in trouble right now because you're seeing a lot less tourists. And we have a generation coming up now that doesn't care so much about alcohol or gambling. And Vegas is like, well, let's put in more slot machines. Let's, you know, going back, hitting that button again. When in reality, Vegas should be putting in, you know, some type of virtual reality gambling. And man, that would attract, you know, millennials from all over the place, people that do that. Now, it'd be tougher for my generation where they could leave some of the slot machines, roulette wheels and stuff like that. But for the younger generation, they're going to have to pivot big time and fast if this city's going to be alive, you know.
Well, and Vegas isn't that old.
Mm-mm.
I mean, so I brought up at the very beginning of this conversation about, you know, my childhood. And I was watching the History Channel one day, and one of the guys I learned how to play darts and pool with was on the History Channel. He was one of the big mob bosses of Vegas. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I'm not that old.
Yeah. It's Robert. It's Dean and I that got the gray hair. Right?
I want to know how you keep the block up on top, though, Ray. I can't. I got snow on the mountain.
Yeah, Ray's working its way in there. I don't know. It'll be there in a couple of years.
I can't wait to get this inside of my head. I mean, so far it's still not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's so funny.
But I mean, we utilize that stuff inside of business all the time, and I think there's a lot happening inside of the world.
Right.
I think that's almost why you have a transition inside of business right now to where people have a lot of fake stuff out there, and our brains are trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
I think it was Orrin Claff that brought up the whole entire caveman brain moment of, you know, am I going to eat it? Am I going to mate with it? If I'm going to do that, you have that whole piece with how AI is coming into this world of business. It's going to change everything up.
Oh, yeah. And
go ahead, Ray. I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, based on what Rob said, you know, the thing is business is dynamic. It is not static. And that's where I think a lot of business owners get into their trouble. And I just want to interject that. I'm going to let you – sorry about interrupting you there. But it's so dynamic. You got to be able to change.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to keep an eye on the market all the time because it changes, and all of a sudden you're looking around like, where did it go? You know, I work with a financial advisor, and, you know, I asked him, I said straight out, like, what are you going to do to protect yourself against AI? And he's like, I hadn't even thought about that. I'm like, if you're not using AI nowadays, it's like using the phone book, you know? And I said, let me show you what it just printed out. And I just went in there and I said, you know, can you work as my financial advisor? And man, it shot me a whole paper out on what to do. And I sent it to him. And he's like, that's spot on.
I just did a podcast or a huddle with a guy who created a piece of software, and it's licensed with the SEC and everything as a financial advisor. And it's an AI.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so true. And I can't believe how quickly that is coming on. And so as soon as we discovered it a couple months ago or so, we have been utilizing it left and right and have actually made some pretty good money using it. And I'm amazed by it. And I'm also amazed by people that aren't using it.
And it looks at the big picture. It doesn't look at everything. So one of the conversations we had on that podcast which it hasn't posted yet as of recording this, but one of the big conversations we had is it looks at the big picture and doesn't have any influence whatsoever on I'm going to make extra money or how much I'm going to make, because it's a flat rate and it's a monthly subscription instead of a SaaS model. It has no core to be able to say, I'm going to make more money for myself. There's no greed factor there. It's actual true advice of based on how much taxes you're going to pay, what investments would be good for you. I mean, it was amazing to me to see, because I worked inside of the data side of that world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like finding like five doctorate people that are saying, you know, I'll work for a dollar a day. You know what I mean? And just, yeah, I go in there. I just was using it before this podcast, just, you know, getting some stuff lined up for my day and, you know, writing scripts, videos. It lined me out all my TikToks for the month, all the stuff I got to do. It's phenomenal. Yeah. And so the other aspect, though, what I think is going to happen is we're going to get to the place where we're using AI so much that the people, the personal factor, I think will also be escalated. So interacting with people is the other portion of what I'm doing, and having that one-on-one connection to get a person loyal to you, because nobody's going to be loyal to AI. You know, they'll use it, however, but you know, the businesses that I run working with schools, I'm always in contact with them and they like that personal touch. And so, just, you know, having that conversation over the phone.
So Ray, you know, people don't get a chance to, you know, like most businesses, you don't really get a chance to meet people, and the AI content is out there. How do you use some of the other things like social? Do you use, you said TikTok or X or whatever? Use the social media to get people to meet you, to understand you, to say, hey, this Ray's a good guy. I want to do business with him or have him talk to my people. Is that how you kind of introduce yourself, or what's your
process? My social media is all out there just to remind people I'm out there. That's it.
Okay.
So I'll go out this weekend. I went out and I spoke in New York City, and I spoke to about 450 people. And so I do this whole presentation, and it was to my mark, not my mark. It's to my like inner circle group. These are people that want my information. And so this is going to sound really old, but this has worked the best. I let them know, listen, I put out a newsletter once a month, maybe every other month. I said, I don't allow people to sign up on it. The only way that you can sign up for my newsletter is through a business card. You have to give me your business card, and then I will, you know, make sure that you get signed up on the newsletter. And that's pretty much how we do it. Now, what happens when I do that, it adds this personal touch, right? They're like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to get me on this newsletter. Nobody else can get on because, you know, it's only through a business card. So I bring that back. I give it to my staff. They know how to do it, and they put it all in there, and I get all these people signed up. We send them a welcome letter where they can find me on social media. So whenever I post something, it's not a hire me. It's a, hey, I'm still out here. And even when I send out my newsletter, it's never a hire me newsletter. It's here's the new information that we're presenting on. Here's how we put it into our presentation. And that's it. And everybody's like, wow, and it has been so successful for us doing it that way. So it's
education first.
Education first, right? Because that's what they're looking for. They know I'm for sale. They know that they can bring me in to speak. So I don't need to say that over again, right? They know that I have a product that they want. So I don't need to keep hitting them with that information over and over again. So we have a newsletter of about probably close to 6,000 or 7,000 people. Everybody on that newsletter at some point has seen me speak. So it's a real personal newsletter. And cool. I'm sure you guys get newsletters, right? You signed up for something and then all of a sudden you start getting, you know, three it's a always- week. You're like, oh, geez. Right? Yeah.
Well, my problem is I signed up for something that I think is going to be beneficial.
Yes.
And then I start getting sales pitches all the time. And it's like, okay, delete, unsubscribe, you know. And that's a fine line you have to watch for on newsletters is, it's informational pieces. Yeah. Rob and I talk about that all the time on keeping it, you know, informational or what we call evergreen content kind of things. That doesn't really go away or new trends. I think you agree with that, Rob, for the most part.
I would. We've been really diving into that a lot. I mean, we paused our YouTube channel for right this second. at the time of recording this. By the time this posts, it'll be back up and going. I believe that resetting algorithms sometimes is the best way of doing something. Sometimes going quiet for a little bit, if you're not getting the results or not getting the right target you're looking for, taking a little bit of a break and looking at the data and seeing what the data, where it evens out and where people look at the data, and being able to see that from a data science part. But we're also looking at how we interact with people inside of email sequences when they sign up. Dean and I handle, for Simply Be Found, we handle almost 100% of the support. And we do that because we want that personal side of it. And we couldn't do it without the team that's behind us making us be able to pull all the strings and do that, because we wouldn't be able to do it at that level. But you have to be able to have it be unique. And nobody, if you, somebody just wants a commodity and they just want a number and they want to be a number, great. But I, that's not the business I would ever want. It sounds like you're in that same boat.
Yeah, same exact boat. And then here's the other thing that I would recommend for businesses to do. And you got to interview the people that walk away from you mad, or walk away from you that hate you. You know what I mean? Because they're going to have so much information of what you did wrong, how they perceived you. And I worked with this one organization here in Las Vegas, and it was for people like me, CEOs. After about 2 months, I hated them. I mean, I did everything I could to get my money back and all that. And, you know, and so once I left, I wrote them a real nice letter. And I said, you know what? I'm the person you should interview. I said, if you're only interviewing people that like you, you're never going to get the information on why I walked away and why other people are going to walk away. And so that's one of the things that I think we're afraid to do as businesses is find out why didn't you rehire me? Why did you go to my competitor? And I'm not asking in a mean way. I just want to know, what did I do wrong and what can I change? And I did that when I first started doing this business. You know, I'd have come in and I could tell when I left, I was not going to get an invite back, or, you know, they were going to use my information. And I remember calling a couple of people like, what did I do wrong? And they were, you know, they laid it out and I made those changes, and it has really been beneficial to my business. It's hard to look at that stuff. You know, it's hard to ask those questions, but you know, I mean, there's so much information when a person walks away.
Yeah. That quadrant where, you know, they know something about you that you don't know about yourself. That's the discovery window. And we had a client that left us, and I said, why? Well, you just don't. And I could never, I said, I can handle it. Lay it on me. I really want to know, because if we screwing something up, we need to know that. And sometimes people they're just too polite to really let you have it. And then you're the other ones that just let you have it. And you go, oh, my God, I don't know if I can take it. But you wanted it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's such a good point, Ray, that you have to discover the things about yourself that you don't realize is happening. And that's really a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a school one time where I presented, and man, they were upset. I mean, just, you know. And my first reaction was, it's just them. It's not me. I've been doing this for a long time, you know, and they wanted to have a conference call with me, and it was really tough. And I'm like, I'm going to listen to these people. I'm going to see what they have to say. And sure enough, they said a couple of things that I had to make some adjustments in my presentation, because I didn't realize how it was sounding. Inside my head, it sounded great and it made sense. But when it came out, it sounded a whole different way to my audience. And believe it or not, that was a very difficult call to go through. But once we went through it, we did make some changes and, you know, saw some benefit from that. So, yeah, my recommendation for your businesses that are listening right now, man, talk to the people that walk away mad. And, you know, if you take them out to lunch and just let them know, I screwed up, I want to know how I screwed up, you know, and that's huge.
Well, it makes a big difference, because you're not going to make everybody happy in this world. Some you just don't connect.
Yeah.
And You're not the right fit. I mean, I've done that with a couple of our competitors. I love to talk to competitors. I love people who are kind of in the same space to come join on the huddle. But I've invited some of our true big competitors that are, some of them are public companies that they were doing what would that be? Corporate sabotage or sabotage. I was like, I'm going to say that wrong. But I mean, they were coming in. I figured out where they were, and they were using our chat, and they were going through and having that conversation. I'm like, if you guys want to know everything, just hop on a huddle and let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Talk about how, where you shine, where we shine, and what, you know, where we both shine in the same spots or where we both fail. I'm like, it'd be a great conversation. They didn't take me up on it. They were shocked. They were like, what? Huh?
Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, that there's, you know, an opportunity maybe to work together, but you know what, you'll be doing something a little bit different than they do. And that's what will be your edge to that kind of stuff. And,
right.
You know, I look out there and there's a lot of speakers out there and there's a lot of people doing what I do. I just, my voice is different, you know, and, just a little bit different, and it might suit somebody that it doesn't suit somebody else. So yeah, you're spot on doing that. So
a question for you, Ray. You're obviously, you are your own brand for yourself, for your speaking. Are there corporate entities or bigger groups that kind of have coaches out there that go around and do the same thing? Or is it in your industry kind of all the, is that you, where I'm going to is the personal touch is what makes you unique. Are there, do you have competition out there that is in your world that doesn't pivot? It's the same thing over and over, regurgitated kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I have definitely worked with, you know, different organizations, and I'm willing to work with anybody. If there's somebody that's doing the same exact thing that I'm doing, if I can help them be successful, it has always come back on me. You know, I don't feel like I've ever lost business. I don't feel like I've ever burnt myself because I helped somebody else. But I'll give you an example. I'm working with an individual right now, and her whole message is overcoming difficulties, especially for kids and for businesses. And it has gone so smooth for her for the longest time. And then when she hit this AI wall where everybody's starting to use AI now and you know, artificial intelligence, and kind of her business is going down, she's kind of moved away from her message. And I asked her, I said, you have always spoke about overcoming difficulty. Why are you not living that out now? And it goes back to her brain just doesn't want to think like that. It's like A and B has always equaled C. I want to keep doing A and B, but I'm like, A and B are gone, you know? And so it's exactly what we talked about a moment ago. You have to be willing to pivot. You have to go, what I did a year ago doesn't work anymore, you know, and I got to change the way that I'm doing it, you know, and you see that with, you know, you see that with everything. I like, you know, I mean, I was having this conversation the other day, you know, our TV is so amazing. I mean, it's connected to the internet. It's got built in Netflix. It has, you know, YouTube. I mean, it's got everything. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to go back to a television where, you know, my kid has to sit next to it and change the channel for me. I don't want that anymore. And nobody wants, you know, something that worked 5 years ago, because it's not. Yeah. So definitely what you're talking about right there, Dean, is, you know, you got to be willing to pivot. You got to do that in your business and just know what I was doing doesn't work anymore.
So do you think it's more of a fear or it's more of a habit? Or what is it that makes a business owner in that moment, in your opinion, to go through and just not want to change? What goes through the brain at that point? What are you seeing?
Oh, great question. And this will go back to the addiction stuff. Number one, brain's lazy, right? Once it finds a solution, it sticks to that solution. And when I'm talking with businesses, one of the examples that I give, another example I give about the brain being lazy is, I'm sure you guys have gone to your favorite restaurant with a friend, right? And maybe as you're driving there, you say, you know what? I'm going to eat something different tonight, right? Your spouse, whatever. And then when you get there, they hand you a menu. What do? You order the same thing, right? Because the brain has found that solution. You don't even look at anything else on the menu. And so, you know, it goes back to that. So number one, the brain is lazy. Number two, the brain wants to be right in every situation, and it's afraid to be wrong because wrong works weird inside the brain. And then the big one is the fear factor. And one of the things that I'm working on with businesses, it's called the hero's journey. And this is where a lot of people get stuck. And so you take a movie, like, you know, whatever your favorite movie is or whatever, there's a hero in there. Did you guys see Lord of the Rings?
I've never seen Lord of the Rings,
no. Yeah, so you kind of doing the Joseph Campbell approach to stories?
Yes, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Which that's been redone multiple times. I mean, Donald Miller did it. I mean,
yeah. But the story's still the same, though. The
it's always stayed the same.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what it is. It's like, you know, I've been a gym speaker my entire life, going into gyms and high schools and stuff like that. And it's just like that hero's journey. There was a point where I'm like, I'm tired of being in the gym. I'm tired of fighting the air conditioner. I'm tired of fighting the microphone that doesn't work or the overhead. And that's where that shift came in. And so people have that. People have the, I'm tired of living in this apartment. I'm tired of doing this job. And then the next thing that happens is they try to reinforce and overcome that fear. Everything's fine. Everything's going to be okay. And that's where people get stuck, is in that fear, the fear of the unknown, the fear of letting go what's familiar and trying to grab a hold of something that you can't see that's there. And, you know, the beauty of being married to my wife is she's not afraid to jump. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, I said, hey, let's just quit what we're doing and try something new. And she's like, all right. And I mean, we literally have done that like four or five times. We've left the familiar and walked into the unknown, and we're successful. And we're in the process.
Is that an addiction of its own?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So you just hear a history point. My wife hangs around with me. She goes, because I'm not going to train another one.
Yeah.
I've done trained you. So she lets me do all my stupid stuff and allows me to do it, you know?
Yeah. That is so funny. Yeah, I don't want to train another one. No, my wife, she's amazing, man. She's ready to jump when I say, let's just stop what we're doing and try something new. But Robert, it is an addiction. It's the same as that adrenaline you get from climbing a mountain or jumping out of a plane you're just falling into the abyss, hoping that there's something down there. And, you know, I've done this enough times to know there's something down there. It's going to work out. I don't know how, but it's going to work out, you know? And so I give you the example, the very first time we got married in 88, so we've been married for quite a while. And then 1989, I woke up and I realized, oh my gosh, this is the last summer of the 80s. You know, the 80s was my era. And we were living up in a little town in California. And when I woke up in 1989, like the beginning of summer, I looked at my wife and I said, we can't work this summer. We just got to hang out at the beach all summer long because we're not going to have another summer in the 80s. And most people would fight that. And she's like, all right. And so we literally quit our jobs, got rid of our apartment, and she's like, well, what are we going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. It'll work out, you know? And so it was so crazy because our jobs ended. We had the weekend. And then Sunday afternoon, this lady that we knew, she goes, hey, we're going away for like 3 weeks. And our housekeeper, you know, the person that was going to watch our house isn't able to do it. Are you guys free? And I'm like, well, what a coincidence. We are. We house sat that entire summer, ate people's food, stayed at these wonderful houses in Santa Barbara and San Ynez. And then, and so the last Sunday of the summer, we're sitting on this park bench overlooking the ocean outside of Santa Barbara. And my wife's like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. It'll work out. Monday morning, we got a call from this guy that got a huge contract to grow roses for the Rose Parade. And he was looking for a worker. And I'm like, hey, what do you know? I'm free. And it was just seamless. And that has been our life. We have jumped and we're in the process of jumping right now. We are taking what was familiar, which most businesses won't do this. We're taking what was familiar and we're going, that's the old stuff. We're going to invent new stuff. And, you know, we're scrambling to figure it out, but I feel alive doing this, you know.
That's awesome. So when you're going through and you're working with a business,
uh-huh.
Are you coaching them and working with them on the self-sabotage? So from all the business owners I've ever coached, from being in the venture capital world, from doing all the things I've done.
Uh-huh.
People get to business owners get to a certain point, and when it gets unfamiliar, mm-hmm. they will do something to self-sabotage the business or themselves to be able to make it familiar again, because there again the brain is lazy,
right,
and they'll go back. So have you worked with anybody on that aspect?
Oh yeah, totally. And we do the fear casting, you know, like what's the worst case scenario, you know, what can happen. So we go down that road. And I was just with a gentleman on Saturday where we were doing this fear casting. And I was amazed at the places that his brain would go that were just so far out there. Just, it's going to end. I'm going to end up in my car. I'm going to end up being, I'm like, if you're working on your business, if you're, you know, really fine, I just can't see how that will happen. So we talk about that. And it's not so much self-sabotaging, where you can self-sabotage just a little bit, you know, and start right. making new things, as opposed to, you know, I wouldn't recommend how we do it, where we just like, all right, we're done with that new thing, you know, and it's just crazy the turn that we've made. And, you know, and I am lucky enough to have a staff that's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's see where it goes, you know. And what's crazy is it's never gone wrong for us. And I just journaled all that, all the times when I think things were going to go wrong, and they didn't. Sure, it slowed down. Sure, we had less income coming in. Sure, it got scary. But then on the other side of that, it changed this whole thing. And we're back on the cutting edge of, you know, what we're doing again.
So, well, you have to have your rough moments to be able to pull yourself back out of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, it's kind of like if you have money, one of the biggest things is, you know, it's hard to keep it. So mm-hmm. it's easy to make the money. It's harder to keep it. And so you have to live life like you're broke all the time, because if you don't live life like you're broke, you're going to make decisions that would be horrible and, you know, not down the road. So act like you have no money. The bank account sometimes is the best things you could ever do inside of business. Sorry right. for interrupting you, Dean.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Dean?
I don't remember now.
I knew he was going to say that.
I got sucked into Rob's hero journey that I forgot what I was going to talk about. So.
well, think about this. And, you know, I've been working on this as well. I used to attend, not for me, but I used to take people to AA meetings, right? And so they would talk about their crazy addiction backgrounds and stuff like that. I've heard every story. I've heard the story of living in a dumpster. I've heard the story of prostitution. I've heard the story of being homeless. I've heard the story of, you know, almost dying, car accident. You name it, I've heard that story. And what I've always heard at the end of that story is, you know what? I'm glad I went through it, because it's made me who I am today.
Right.
And the thing is, nobody ever goes through something that is easy and go, wow, that really made me a better person, or wow, that really showed me something. It is the difficult in time, the really hard times in life, that we look back and go, man, I made it through. I'm glad I went through that. As awful as it was, I'm glad I went through that, because it made me who I am today. And I've been thinking, why are we so afraid of the hard times? Why are we so afraid to go through these difficult things that stretch us and almost break us? Because every time we get to the other side of that, we go, man, I'm glad I went through that, because it really made me who I am today. And I've been trying to change my thinking on that with hard things, with hard, difficult times, when I should be looking for these difficult times as opposed to looking for the easy times. Because I never have walked away from an easy time going, oh man, that really made me who I am today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Rob and I, we had that same conversation. I don't want to say that I want to see a recession. I don't want to see a downturn in business.
Right.
But it seems like every time that happens, boom, we come back out. We come out the other end of it better, because we have to do a reset. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to do a reset. What am I going to do to get myself through this? And sometimes those little things that you do to get yourself through those hard times are what drive you to be more successful when the hard times aren't there.
Yeah, yeah. That's just like, I mean, I was school-based. My bread and butter comes from being on a campus talking to kids. So when COVID hit, there was an instant Thursday we were working, Friday we weren't. You know what I mean? And I just watched all my contracts drop off. And I thought, it's over. It's done. And I went through that depression phase for a minute. And then my wife and I got together. She does, you know, a lot of the background stuff for me. We got together and thought, well, how can we use this to our benefit? How can we pivot when nobody else is pivoting? So kids were still having to go to school. So we created webinars, and everybody else was creating webinars as well. But we did ours a whole different way, where people were standing talking to kids like you would in a classroom. We made our webinars, and my daughter works with me as well. We did ours like a morning talk show, where we had cups of coffee and we're talking and we're asking questions, we're having conversation, and kids loved it, because it felt more like an interaction, something that you would watch on TV, as opposed to a lecture where they would just lose that. And our webinars, man, I mean, probably after, I don't know, maybe about 3-4 months into COVID, when kids still needed drug and alcohol information, our business just, again, exploded. And it just, people found out we were doing it a whole different way. And by the time other people tried to catch up doing it the way we were already ahead in the market.
So when you were doing those, Ray, how'd you set up the webinar? Was it where you see everybody, you know, or was it more like a TED talk where we just watched you on stage kind of thing? Was that, you know, because we have people that ask, you know, what's the best way to effectively get people involved? I'm just kind of curious what your approach was.
Well, what was happening is we looked around and saw what was not working, and Zoom was not working because people were, remember, they were jumping into Zoom meetings and they were disrupting those. So we went with a thing called Webinar Jam. And so what it was people, it was almost like an auditorium setting where we're up on stage in this webinar and everybody's out in the audience. So they can't see each other, but they can all interact with each other through the comments. So kids would be commenting, they would be talking, they would be asking questions. And one of the things that kids really loved is when they would ask questions, then we had the person in the background feeding us the questions. We're like, oh, we just got a question from so-and-so, you know, super sofa number one. You know, they're asking a question about alcohol and why does it do this, or asking a question about marijuana. And it was just really interactive, but the kids could not see each other. The only way they could interact with each other was through chat. And if a kid got in there and just started like, marijuana is great, we love marijuana, we could easily bump them out of the chat, you know. So that was our thing. And I set it up exactly like, you know, like an auditorium setting. Because we've all been on those Zoom calls where, you know, man, you see this part of the person's face, or they flip it open and you see the ceiling fan, or they're, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they're being this clear, you know, they're on the phone even though they're muted. And you're like, what is going on here? You know,
my ADHD brain, when I see a fan going to the background, it's like,
yeah,
look at that. Wow.
Yeah. I'm so, like, man, maybe they should have wore pants, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So you see something in their background that's on the shelf and you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Oh, somebody's talking. Oh.
Yeah, and kids, man, it'd be awful. So we had to really be cautious what we had in our background and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. So we still do a few webinars right now. We make them real personal to the classrooms and stuff. And so,
Do you get more interaction with the webinar than you would in person sometimes because of the fear factor of questions?
Yes. We get so much interaction because kids will ask stuff that they would not ask in public. And I loved it. And it was great. So we'd get kids that are like, hey, I'm asking for a friend who smokes weed like 4 times a day. What's going to happen to them? And I'm like, great question, you know, or, you know, all of that. And so now we're starting our corporate end of this with webinars as well that we're getting ready to launch probably the beginning of July, where we're doing the same type of webinars, but we're doing them for businesses. And so a lot of businesses are still online and they have their weekly meetings. And we've been doing this with realtors, a couple realtor meetings, where we just break, you know, they allow us to come in for like 20 minutes of their meeting. And I just hammer out some information on, you know, getting your clients loyal to you. And, you know, and then they, if they ask for more information, we're able to give them that more information.
Well, I think it brings out a whole piece, mm-hmm. especially when you go live. That's part of the marketing plan we're looking at right now is going live with some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Live just myself or Dean and I on there for people to come in and interact. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a whole different piece that comes into that that makes it so unique mm-hmm. and so much of a draw because you can ask those questions and you can kind of keep yourself private inside of there, but mm-hmm. yet know that it's coming from you.
Right.
I mean, there's so many different aspects. Mm-hmm. So when we looked at doing the huddle and doing everything, so the huddle all started because I started doing podcasts and I was a guest inside of these podcasts.
Right.
It all felt exactly the same. And it was driving me nuts. I'm like, all right, there's a better way of doing this.
Right.
And I was like, well, shit, Dean and I are going to, my biggest struggle with him is I can't get him to come in and do video and record any videos. I can't get in front of the screen. So I started kind of the conversation of, you know, what about doing a podcast for us? Well, we started in January.
Right.
I'd say we stubbed our toes, got ourselves, you know, wet, figured out what we want to be when we grow up and, you know, the interactions, what kind of guests, all those different things that come in. Mm-hmm. But it's been a different type of reaction inside of there. Because I was like, I don't want it to feel like it is a canned thing. I don't want to know what those answers are or the questions are to anything.
Right.
It can't be a script. Let's bring something real. And if it connects with somebody, great. And if it doesn't, that's okay too. It's not for everybody.
Right, right. No, you put all that out there. And I love the setup that you have. It feels so professional as opposed to some of the other podcasts that I've been on. And just, you know, your information's on the screen and all that. And, you know, it just, yeah, I think you guys are definitely on the right road. And I, you know, feel that both of you, you know, Dean, I feel like you got the wisdom end of it, man. All the life experience that you have, you know. And Robert, I feel like you got the good questions, you know, and I think you guys make a good team on this. So, yeah.
And you know, we just like the fact that it's not scripted. I mean,
right.
Because you get so, put the blinders on, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to take you down where I want to take you instead of where we're going to end up at, because that's why we love these kind of, and when, you know, even though you're kind of in a different relation, you know, in a different kind of field, I still get, I pick up things from you. I learn something from you. And that's the whole point is, you know, there may be, like Rob said, there may be only one takeaway, but that may change your whole career, your whole business.
Right.
On that one takeaway. It may just go that aha moment
Right. Kind
of thing.
Yeah, that's so true. Cause you never know, you know, I mean, I've listened to podcasts and, you know, it's an hour long and I'll pull out like, you know, 30 seconds of it. And like, that's exactly what I needed to hear, man. That's where I need to go in that direction. And, you know, you never know where it'll go. And that free flow is always fun because, yeah, it's not like, oh, by the end of this podcast, you know, you're going to know these three things. Yeah, you never know. And I love it. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, our editing team's like, really, you want to do it unedited? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's, you know, it's not the norm, but I've never been the one to be on the normal track anyway. So
yeah.
I've never had a normal moment in my life.
If people are listening to it, they can't see my facial reaction. Rob's not normal. Yeah. I'm telling you, he is not normal.
Not normal. That's okay, man. That's your uniqueness. That's pretty awesome. I had a guy that was doing my marketing and he wanted all my videos to go out looking super professional. Just so to produce one video, man, took just forever. Cause you know, you got to have the background looking right. Your shirt's got to look right. And I read this thing that's like, it totally changed my whole persona on this. So when I go out and speak, like I got a corporate event coming up in a couple of weeks. I tell people, I start off and I go, hey, listen, you know what? If I find out you have stolen my information and six months from now, I find out that you're using all of my information, let me tell you what, I'm going to be so happy. I'm going to be glad that you have stolen all my information. So I want to see some phones on the table. I want to see you recording this because what I have found is if I let people record me up on stage, they show their friends and they're like, wow, if this guy's pretty good on video, this guy's great on video, I wonder how he is live. And it's totally changed our marketing because they'll watch these videos and like, this is great information. I bet this guy's so much better live. And so now, you know, I let people do that and I'll see stuff that's posted on me. It's maybe blurry. The camera moves around a little bit, but you can hear the audio and it's actually brought me business doing that. And so I love what you're talking about, Robert, just kind of free flowing, man. Just, you know, don't edit it. Let's just see where it goes and see what happens. And you know.
So I love what you say, Ray, but they get me up on stage. You're going to have a defib to resuscitate me because I get so stressed out.
Yeah.
So and Rob's laughing because he's seen it happen where I get up there and go, oh,
yeah.
Oh, what do I?
Yeah. Yeah. We got a class for that. So, yeah.
I mean, I get nervous about going up in front of a group of people. Once I start doing it, I'm fine. But I mean, I have to get over that whole entire piece. But Dean, I mean, we were going to do an event to the library and he, I thought he was going to absolutely just flip out.
I used to speak better in front of people, but I haven't done it for so long. So this has really helped me. Rob, by doing this, Rob has helped my thought process a little better along and to be more interactive. And right. I thank him for that. But I still got to get past that, get it up on stage. So we're going to have to do little baby steps. I'll do a couple of chamber events or something like that, maybe, or a Better Business Bureau where it might be a smaller group. And get myself used to that again. So that's the thing, though. But you have to put yourself out there as a business owner and in those places that aren't comfortable.
Yeah. You know, I work with a lot of young speakers who have that. And the reason why you lock up, Dean, and you're not able to talk or concentrate, you guys ever seen any of those animal documentaries like bears or rams or, you know? And so you'll see these two bears and they square off with each other, right? They're going to fight and they're trying to figure out, can I win? And they kind of like circle each other for a little while. You know how they do that?
Uh-huh.
And so what they're doing is they're making eye contact and they're trying to figure out, can I beat this other bear? So we have the same mechanism inside our brain. So Dean, when you walk up and you are looking at people looking back at you, what your brain flips into, it flips into that bear mode, like, man, I'm looking at all these people. It's not just one set of eyes looking back at me. It's like 80 sets of eyes. There's no way I can win this fight. And that's what your brain says. So it flips into this fight or flight mechanism. And so when it flips into the flight mechanism, it shuts off and all you're thinking about is retreating. That's why you can't think about what you're going to say. So the way that I help young speakers overcome that is it's all through rehearsal. It's all through muscle memory. And we actually run a class on this where we talk about, you know, rehearse, 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 rehearse. So when you get up there, your brain doesn't do that. So now when I stand in front of, you know, 800 junior high kids, my brain doesn't think, whoa, can I win this fight? My brain's like, we got this. And so it changes the way you think. So that's what happens is your brain flips into that mode.
Okay. Thank you for that.
That's awesome. Yeah. See, mine's completely different. Mine is the whole entire brain and the stomach piece. Cause then I end up getting the craps before going up.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother piece.
I know this is so weird. I don't even know if I should go down this road, but
too much information, man.
It happens with animals when they get ready to fight. They just, all of that takes place inside them. So, and so it's just what your brain is doing. It's flipping over into the flight mechanism.
Well, it's a whole entire piece. Mm-hmm. It's built in there. So there's a story I like to tell that kind of goes into that same piece. And it involves the crapping side. I was up fishing. I was probably 12 or 13. I had my Walkman. Uh-huh. It wasn't even a CD player. It was a true Walkman.
Nice.
I was fly fishing this path behind North Michigan Reservoir. Uh-huh. And it has all the sage bushes and all that are back there. And I'm just listening to it and I'm just going. And I come around and I can feel the breath of a moose right in my face.
Right.
I was okay at that moment. I'm getting ready to back up. I back up, I turn around. There's a calf behind me.
Oh, no.
And I just, shit. I'll never forget that. Yeah, I was like, it kind of, I walked away. I don't know if that saved me from getting trampled. I have no idea, but I was like,
That's it right there.
That is fight or flight 100%.
That's it right there. Yeah. I always feel like you've got to go to the bathroom right before, and it's just the way that your whole system works. Yeah.
Right. And maybe that's what triggered it for later in life. I still think about it. That's where it relates to. Who knows?
Could be.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you work with business owners on, Ray?
You know, not wanting to change is a big one. I see a lot of businesses that undervalue what they do. And so they present themselves that way. They don't present themselves as being the item that the person needs to be successful. And then the other thing is, and it goes back to that hero's journey thing, the businesses want to be the hero. And if they want to be the hero, then what happens is it takes that away from the other individual. So if I'm working with like the realtor organization that I just did a whole bunch of stuff with, I don't want to come in and go, you know what, let me be your hero. I want them to be the hero because they're going to come back to me. And it goes back to understanding drugs and alcohol, right? I'm going to go back to that person that makes me feel good. I'm going to go back to that person that makes me feel secure. And that's one of the things that I see businesses, they want to, you know, come out and say, you know, I'm the answer to your problem. And I just can't, it just doesn't work for me. And I don't see that it works for businesses. But if a business came out and go, let me help you find the answer, then a person's going to be, you know, connected to them for a long time, because we all do that, right? We all have that place we like to go to, that restaurant where they treat us right. And we're able to take our friends there and maybe, you know, demonstrate, well, they really like me here. This is a great place. We all have that. So that's one of the big struggles that I have helping businesses overcome, because there's just been this concept, I think from, you know, early 2000 or so, that you have to present yourself as, you know, the answer, or being successful, or being, you know, on top, and it gives you that illusion. And then when people start to see that you actually aren't, it's just so discrediting. So pivoting, helping people find the answer, not being the answer, you know, coming alongside people and, you know, helping them be successful. Those are the things that I have to help businesses overcome sometimes.
Right. So what you're saying is they have to tell their story about how they can help the customer, right, or the person that's looking for the solution.
Right.
And they can't have the imposter syndrome going on to be able to imposter somebody.
Right.
Or not.
Right. Right. And then, you know, the other thing too is, businesses, what we talked about earlier, they don't want to talk to customers that walked away from them. They just don't. And right. That I think that it's so important to, you know, pull up your big boy pants and go, what did I do wrong here? You know, I'm you know, I may not be able to make it right for you, but where did I go wrong? And, you know, people are sometimes willing to talk about that.
And sometimes that conversation smooths everything over. They'll give you a second chance sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you never know.
Yeah. 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 I was just working with this one business that had kind of promised to promote me quite a bit. And then when it came down to it, they didn't. So we left a lot of money on the table, which, you know, made me a little bit upset, because I had talked about that or put that in my budget and stuff like that. So instead of getting upset, I'm like, well, what happened? Why didn't you, you know, follow through on your contract? Why didn't you promote me, you know, like we did? And I had all these preconceived ideas. And the guy goes, it was because it was for a business in Southern California. And goes, well, he goes, we had all those fires and it really, you know, diverted the way we were doing business. And we just didn't have time to get around to everybody and explain what we were doing or why we, you know, didn't follow through on this. And as soon as he explained it, I said, man, that makes complete sense. I can understand why you didn't, you know, you didn't follow through on this contract. I said, and that's, I get it, you know, and I said, I totally forgiven, you know, there's some money left on the table and stuff like that. But then they immediately were like, wow, thanks. That was really nice of you to handle it that way. You know, let's look at next year's contract and see how we can do that. And so, yeah, it has been beneficial to go down that road.
Well, I think it's one of those things to where you have to admit when you're wrong as a business owner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't see it because you're so close to it and hearing it back. I mean, there's times when we get, you know, we end up having something in our queue, we miss it inside of that queue, and I'll go, you know, I messed up. I didn't get you what I said I'd get you. I'm sorry right. about that. And that goes a long ways.
Oh,
some
yeah.
of my biggest sales in my sales career have been somebody who started off really super pissed.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up, you just wanted to be heard.
Right. Right. Yeah. Totally on that. And then the other one that has really worked for me is when, like, this business that kind of did me, I don't want to say did me dirty. They had a whole bunch of stuff going on, you know, with the fires in Southern California and stuff like that. But if I am gracious to them and I give them slack, I have always found that it comes back to me like, you know, we either want to make up for that or, man, thanks for handling it this way. Because some of their other vendors were really upset that they didn't follow through, you know, on that part of the contract. But once I heard the story of the fires, I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. I can't fight against that. So here's the grace that you need right. to, you know, to go forward on this. Yeah.
Well, and sometimes bad publicity is good publicity too. And you got to remember that sometimes someone being pissed at you is one of the best things that could ever happen to your business.
Yeah. Yeah.
I talk about the story, and Dean knows where I'm going to go with this. There's a story from my parents or my grandparents' furniture store.
Uh-huh.
Lady bought a mattress. We wouldn't let her return it after the holidays. And we're like, no, we have a no return policy on beds. And she was super pissed. We offered to give her some money back. We offered all this. Nothing was going to make her happy, no matter what we said.
Right.
She leaves. She comes back. She parks the car outside of the furniture store. Has all these signs. Don't shop at Dean's. Don't do this. Don't do this. Our business increased because of it. Because people were coming in going, what's her problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when she went to leave, my grandpa was like, it went on for a few weeks. And he was like, oh, she's packing up. I don't know if she's going to come back. Uh-huh. She's pretty upset about it. So you need to go out and find out what she charged to stay because our business is up.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. That is so funny how that works.
I mean, but it's one of those things to where you don't know and you can't fix anything that you don't know.
Yeah.
And some things you can't fix. You can't, you couldn't prevent the fires from happening.
Right.
It's out of control. And no matter what you did, wouldn't have made that situation any different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, that is so true. And gosh, that story you told, I just see things like that happening every now and then where people take the other side of it. You know, you said it was your grandparents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he could have walked out there and started banging on the car and get the hell out of here, get out of our parking lot. But he just like, well, let's see where this goes, and follow through. And it was actually beneficial to his business. So, yeah, it's crazy how that stuff works out. You find that kind of stuff, but you can't.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I mean, the news did a little article on it, though. I mean, there was all kinds of stuff that happened from it. It was publicity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, either you loved it or hated it. But when I worked in the restaurant world, I mean, that's the same thing. I'd offer someone twice their money back that was really upset about something. And sometimes they just keep bitching. It was like, all right, well, I can't. No matter what I say, you're never going to be happy. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you look at people like that and you're like, man, you are your own punishment. I would hate to live in that world. You know what
right.
I mean? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a miserable state of mind.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And you're like, there's nothing you can do to make them happy. There's no way to, to appease them. And just knowing that every day, they live in that. And I just saw this the other day on a flight coming home where, we got to the end of the runway and the plane slowed the engines down and the pilot came on and said, we're on a 30-minute hold. And I look over and I just saw this guy, I was in the aisle seat, a lady reading her book and her husband. And the minute the pilot said that, I just saw the husband go, oh my gosh. And it just, his whole brain, like, we're not going to make our next flight. Our luggage isn't going to make. And I could just see the lady close her eyes and like, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's the world she lives in, and how miserable is that? And just like the lady with, having her, it's just, that story's just so crazy. She had to go out and buy plywood, right? And then she had to have somebody build this thing. You had to think, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to go sit in this parking lot and eat some Girl Scout cookies and just see if I can destroy this business. Yeah. I mean, all the backstory on that is just, did this lady not have something better to do? It just is crazy to me how people think that way. I love that story.
Yeah. in today's world, it'd be a lot different. Would have been going online and complaining about it. I mean, that would have been 98.
Yeah.
97, 98.
Yeah.
So, that makes me feel old saying that now, but,
listen to you,
you have to be able to, be able to put yourself out there and you never know what's going to come of it.
Yeah.
And you're going to be throwing some stuff inside a business that could be bad, good, everything mixed into it, but you never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
And what that's going to be, what that's going to lead to later in life.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, that is so true. You never know who you're going to run into that can help promote you, and that's why you try to treat everybody equal. And the events that you think are going to do really well, they don't go well. And the events that you think, I don't know why I'm doing this, they end up being something pretty amazing. So, yeah, you just never know. And I think that's what I love about being an entrepreneur. I love every day just trying to figure it out. And I think that's what keeps me going. And that's, I think, what most entrepreneurs enjoy is the trying to figure it out. Times are rough. Let's figure it out. Times are going smooth. Figure it out. And when you get bogged down with that fear, that's when you lose traction and your vehicle stops. So, yeah.
how do you help businesses get over that fear side?
We do the fear casting. So we talk a lot about that and just, you know, what is the worst possible, what's the worst case scenario that can go wrong? And so we talk about that. And then we talk about how can you tighten up the clients that are with you right now, you know, and how can you take the information from those clients that are with you and then reproduce that information. And then, you know, I think the fear casting and just letting your brain go crazy with like, what is the worst possible scenario that can happen here? And then backing it up in your business. And so one of the things that I have done just recently with one business, because they just couldn't figure it out. I said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take all of the things or all of the events that you thought were going to be bad for you and see how they turned out. And I gave them the example of our, you know, COVID story. I thought our business was over when COVID hit, you know, and they came out with four really unique scenarios of one of them was a person that did a lot of damage to their business. One of them was a financial thing that happened with their business. One of them was an individual that had come again. And I said, all right, what was your business? What did it look like before? All right. You know, what happened? What was the thing that you know, went really bad that you had fear that this was going to happen? How did you overcome that? And then we break it down into like a formula. And then we take that formula and we apply it to the event that's taking place right now. So, you know, I've done this with our business. So I had to take a formula that we used before. How did I get started speaking? How did I get it up and running? What are all the steps that I took? Then we took that formula and then we applied it to what the new thing that we're doing now. And that's one of the things that, you know, I've done with business. Was it, you know, phone calls? Was it personal touch? Was it getting out there and speaking? Was it marketing? Was it videos? What helped you be successful then? Let's revamp it, bring it up to this, you know, 2025, and then put that back out there. And so, because they're familiar with that formula. And if it's worked once, it'll work again. You just have to update that formula.
And it's probably easier because their brain is used to that formula and they can go into that mode. You just have to bring it up to today's technology.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Bring it up to today's technology and realize that, gosh, it's a lot easier now. But I'm always a firm believer, if you got it to work once, getting it to work again, you know, we'll be right there. Just got to change the way you're doing it a little bit.
Well, you have to remember that marketing and business is nothing but a great big giant ecosystem.
No, yeah.
If you've ever listened to any of my podcasts, it's one of the biggest things we talk about all the our podcast that we talk about all the time is the tree method. So you've got all your listings down at the bottom, mm-hmm. which is all your networks you go to. This is was called NAP back in the day. It's we called it what NAP SW D. Yes. Right, yes. Which is social website added onto your NAP. That's all your listings places. So our listings engine works with over 1,000 different networks. It goes out to them. That's your root base. That's what's right. going to make everything work. Then you have your tree trunk. That's your website. That's your pillar content. That's your SEO, all that. Then up in the canopy, you have so many different pieces. You have, you know, blogging, you have your social media, which then have sub branches for each of the networks. Mm-hmm. You might have paid ads. You might have, you know, cold emailing or cold calling, or you might have direct sales, but your canopy, every business's canopy is totally different
right.
for what's going to be inside of that and is making that whole entire piece work. But each of those pieces have to connect together mm-hmm. in today's world. So right. there's a lot of that stuff in there. And I think a lot of people try to make themselves the hero and they shouldn't be.
Right.
Back to your hero piece.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only that, but going back to your, you know, tree analogy. And one of the things that I learned way early in business is like, you're going to go through these different seasons. I don't know where they come from, how they work, but you're going to have a season where, you know, like summertime, man, you're just producing fruit. Everything's going great. You're loving it. And then fall comes, you're like, why are things, you know, coming off my tree? Why are the leaves coming off? And then you hit wintertime where everything is just stagnant. Things you try just aren't working. And you have to realize, and that's one of the other things we talk about business, exactly what you're talking about. It's just cyclical. And so it's going to go through these different phases and it's going to go through these, you know, changes that are going to happen. And you just got to be ready for those. You got to know that it comes. It can't always be harvest. It can't always be, you know, it can't always be this barren time. It just goes around in circles. Yeah.
And along that same line is, you know, the tree is what everybody sees, the trunk and the canopy that everybody sees. It's that work that you put underground that nobody sees that really makes the business.
Oh, my.
You know, that's the biggest thing is what you don't see is the most important part of business in a lot of ways, in my mind.
Yeah. Dean, that is so true, because you see people, you know, that want to be where I'm at and they just started, you know, a year ago. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. You can't be where I'm at after 34 years. It's taken me 34 years to get here. You know,
you mean you're saying your instant success didn't just happen?
You have to get your ass kicked a few times.
What was that?
You have to get your ass kicked a few times.
Oh my God. Yeah, you do, man. Yeah, you got to wreck that car a few times. Yeah, totally. When people ask me about my business, I crashed it 3 times. Just, you know, first time I got it up and running, I'm like, man, this is great. It's going well. And then all of a sudden it just crashed, and I had to go back to the drawing board for a couple of years. And then I got it up and running again. And then it crashed. First year, it went 5 years and then crashed. Second year, it went 7 years and it crashed. And then the third time, it went about, you know, a little bit longer. And then finally, when I got it up and running again, it's been so successful for so long now. And so what it was is I had to go back and look at all the things I was doing wrong. But it was those crashes. It's like what we talked about earlier, man. It's the hard things that I'm like, man, I'm glad I went through that. It's those crashes. When I was crashing, I'm like, this is the worst thing that could ever happen. But it actually helped me be successful on the other end.
Yeah, Rob and I kind of went through that same thing last summer. Almost a year ago now. We said, we better pivot or we're going to crash and burn this baby. And we made this big pivot. We went away from the way we were doing things. We were very Google-based. Uh-huh. And we saw some of the things that were happening. And Rob, he spends more time with the analytics than I do, but we talk a lot about attitudes and how people are feeling out there as well, because it's not just the number. The numbers are so important, but the attitude and where people's perceptions are at. And we made a whole shift, and that's why the whole thing with getting that everything underground, the roots, the listings engine was so important, because everybody was just focused on one avenue, which I think is still viable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the weight that it used to. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing that businesses struggle with, is they're so used to doing it. Like you said, they can't pivot. It worked in the past. They think it's still going to continue to work. And we struggle with that all the time with businesses. I mean, trying to get them to understand. Some of them get it, boom. Some of them just don't, you know.
Right. And it's in the good times, it's when things are going really well, that you have to start looking at, how am I going to pivot? You know what I mean? And it's when most people don't think about it. When things are going really well, you got to start planning for it. Things are going to change. You know, I remember when my son years ago was really young, we drove by this Walmart and it was just busy. Man, there were cars in the parking lot. There were people going in and out. And I remember I was just joking with my son. I said, man, I bet one day that's just going to be an empty building. He's like, you think so? And I'm like, yeah, way down the road, it'll be an empty building. And, you know, sure enough, here comes Amazon and it just cut into Walmart, you know. And you look at it like Google was king a number of years ago. And then all of a sudden people stopped searching on Google and they started searching on YouTube, because now they had a video as opposed to something that's written.
Correct.
And so YouTube was king for a long time. And now if I want to look up a bread recipe, or if I want to look up how to, you know, change something on my car, man, I go to TikTok and just put it in there and get that information out. And so that was king for a long time. And now AI, you know, my co-pilot on my MSN, I talk to them and they walk me through these scenarios, and it's crazy how it's changed. I don't even think about Google anymore. You know,
well, I agree.
I mean, we used to be very Google based, and that's what was the big pivot that we made. We're like, all right, it's not there.
Yeah.
But one, they were holding a lot of businesses back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason why they were holding a lot of businesses back is because they have certain rules and certain concepts that you have. So like if we talk about the service area businesses inside of there, would be one of the prime examples I would give.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a hidden address, if you have a residential address, they want you to say that you have to have a hidden address, but that's going to hurt you on these networks that are over here.
Mm.
So if you're basing all of your information then going out to the networks on what Google's rules are, it's going to hurt you on other networks. Well, inside of the world of business, you have so many different places that someone can find you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not on all of those and have that opportunity and starting to warm them up, because you don't know where they're going to end up. They might find you on AI. They might find you on social. They might find you on Google. They might find you on Bing, DuckDuckGo. Right. They might find you on Yellow Pages or YP.com. You never know where they're going to be looking or voice search.
Right.
If you're not found everywhere, you're going to be left behind.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that is so true. And I think that's one of the things about being an entrepreneur. You know, you're always looking for that kind of stuff. You know, you're always trying to see what's coming down the pike or what the trends are. And I know that there's been times I've been working away and I'm like, that just doesn't feel like it's working anymore. I don't know where this intuition comes from, you know, but I think as an entrepreneur, you're just tapped into that. So you probably saw that, you know, with Google, and it probably wasn't even a search that you did. It was just maybe this feeling that you had for a second, like, you know, why is this way? Where can this lead that's not going to be beneficial to us as a business? So, yeah, good for you, man. You're living out what you talk about. So I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we started the whole company on that. So Dean started as a client of ours.
Okay.
A client of mine, I guess it would be. See, now I'm using plural, Dean.
Well, that's good.
I'm still messing that up in your feedback. There you go. I got in my head over that damn thing. So he started off as a client of mine. Then we ended up doing this venture. So. Uh-huh. I mean, it was when voice search was just kicking off, and I was like, hey, I see something happen in voice search. We're getting ready to go into recession. More businesses are going to want to do their own marketing, and I think we're going to have a whole shift and bang in there, and that's where we started the whole company off of. Then COVID happened, and I was like, what the hell is this?
Right. Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, the recession didn't happen. It got delayed out, but there's corrections and balances in business and finance and all those things. You have to stay on top of and be ready to pivot.
Oh, man. Yeah. As an entrepreneur, you got to wear so many different hats, but I think that's what we live for. You know, I know I do, you know, I love it. I love one day I'm, you know, writing a newsletter, and the next day, man, I'm filming a video, and the next day I'm looking at my finances, and I love it, you know, and I couldn't go and sit and do a 9-to-5.
It's a drug of its own.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, you used to go in the corporate world, you get there, you sit down and you're busy and you're working at your desk, you look up and you go, I've only been here for 15 minutes. This is not what I want to be doing.
Right.
Now, as an entrepreneur, I sit down, I work, I look at the clock, I go, oh, I've been here for a half hour too long for my doors to be open, and you love it. I mean, you have to love it every day.
Yeah. That happened to us last night. We worked all day and did a whole bunch of stuff. And then I think like about 6:30, I, you know, looked at my wife and said, we got to stop working. So we went and watched some TV, and about 7:30, so I said, I feel like I could actually go back in the office and do some more work. Cause it's just, I love it. You know, I got to produce 3 videos a day, and I'm so looking forward to it. And she's like, yeah, I could too. And you don't, you know, I just feel so bad for people that go in and think 9-to-5 is the way to go. And, you know, I have those kind of friends that just complain about their job. I can never jump in that conversation because I love what we do.
Yeah, that's great.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, Ray, if anybody's interested in finding you for a speaking event or taking any of your courses or any of that, where would they find you at?
Right now, the best place, and we're getting our new website up and running, just raylozano.com. Super easy to find me there. It's not going to have all of my information on there right now. It's just my speaking business. But if they said, you know, I heard you on this podcast, you know, what are some of the stuff that you do? And we'll be getting this up and running. That's one of the things that we're working on this month. It'll all be in there in the raylozano.com.
Perfect.
Right. Thanks, Ray.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a good conversation. I loved it.
Oh, man, me too. It's just great success to you guys, man. Just I love what you're doing. I love your format and just the free flowing and talking about moose breath in your face. I never thought of it. I love it.
That's one of my go-to stories. I like that one.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Ray.
Yeah, you bet.
Hey,